Chapter 2. Gardner Takes a Walk. 1. Gardner took Anne's advice and went for a walk. He went, in fact, all the way out to the ship in the woods. This was the first time he had been out here by himself, he realized, and it would soon be full dark. He felt vaguely afraid, as a child might, passing near a haunted house. Are there ghosts in there? The ghosts of Tommyknockers past? Or are the real Tommyknockers themselves still in there, maybe in suspended animation? Beings like freeze-dried coffee, waiting to be thawed out. And just what were they, anyhow? He sat on the ground by the lean-to, looking at the ship. After a while, the moon rose and lit its surface an even more ghostly silver. It was strange, and yet very beautiful. What's going on around here? I don't want to know. What it is ain't exactly clear. I don't want to know. Hey, stop! What's that sound? Everybody look. What's going down? He tipped the bottle up and drank deep. He put it aside, rolled over, and rested his throbbing head on his arms. He fell asleep that way, in the woods, near the graceful circular jut of the ship. He slept there all night. In the morning, there were two teeth on the ground. That's what I get for sleeping so close to it, he thought dully. But there was at least one compensation. He had no headache at all, although he had put away nearly a fifth of scotch. He had noticed before that, all its other attributes aside, the ship, or the change in the atmosphere the ship had generated, seemed at very close range to provide hangover protection. He didn't want to leave his teeth just lying there. Heeding an obscure urge, he kicked dirt over them. As he did it, he thought again, playing Hamlet is a luxury you can no longer afford, guard. If you don't commit to one course or the other very soon, in the next day or so, I think, you're not going to be able to do anything but march along with the rest of them. He looked at the ship, thought of the deep ravine which extended down its smooth, unmarked side, and thought again, we'll be down to the hatchway soon, if there is a hatchway. What then? Rather than trying to answer, he struck off for home. 2. The cutlass was gone. Where were you last night? Bobby asked Gardner.
I slept in the woods.
Did you get really drunk? Bobby asked with surprising gentleness. Her face was dark with makeup again, and Bobby had been wearing shirts which seemed oddly loose and baggy the last few days. This morning he thought he could see why. Her chest was thickening. Her breasts had begun to look like a single unit instead of two separate things. It made Gardner think of guys who pumped iron.
Not very. One or two nips and I passed out. No hangover this morning. And no bug bites.
He raised his arms, darkly tanned on top, white and strangely vulnerable beneath.
Any other summer you'd wake up the next morning so bug-bit you couldn't open your eyes. But now they're gone. Along with the birds. And the beasts. In fact, Roberta, it seems to repel everything but fools like us.
Have you changed your mind, guard?
You keep asking me that. Have you noticed?
Bobby didn't reply.
Did you hear the news on the radio yesterday?
He knew she hadn't. Bobby didn't see, hear, or think about anything now but the ship. Her head shake was no surprise.
Troops massing in Libya. More fighting in Lebanon. American troop movements. The Russians getting louder and louder about SDI. We're all still sitting on the powder keg. That hasn't changed a bit since 1945 or so. Then you discover a deus ex machina in your backyard, and now you keep wanting to know if I've changed my mind about using it.
Have you?
No, Gardner said, not sure if he was lying or not, but he was very glad Bobby couldn't read him.
Oh, can't she? I think she can. Not much, but more than she could a month ago. More and more each day, because you're becoming now, too.
Changed your mind? That's a laugh. You can't fucking make up your mind. Bobby dismissed it, or appeared to do so. She turned toward the pile of hand tools stacked on the corner of the porch. She had missed making up a spot just below her right ear, Gardner saw. It was the same spot many men miss when they are shaving. He realized with a sickish lack of surprise that he could see into Bobby. Her skin had changed, had become kind of semi-transparent jelly. Bobby had grown thicker, shorter over the last few days, and the changes were accelerating. God, he thought, horrified and bitterly amused. Is that what happens when you turn into a Tommyknocker? You start looking like someone who got caught in a great big messy atomic meltdown? Bobby, who had been bending over the tools and gathering them up in her arms, turned quickly to look at Gardner, her face wary. What? I said, let's get moving, you lazy juggins, Gardner sent clearly, and that wary, puzzled expression became a reluctant smile. Okay, help me with these then. No, of course victims of high gamma radiation didn't turn transparent, like Claude Rains in The Invisible Man. They didn't start to lose inches as their bodies twisted and thickened. But yes, they were apt to lose teeth. Their hair was apt to fall out. In other words, there was a kind of physical becoming in both cases. He thought again. Meet the new boss. Same as the old boss. Bobby was looking narrowly at him again. I'm running out of maneuvering room, all right, and fast. What did you say, guard? I said, let's go, boss. After a long moment, Bobby nodded. Yeah, she said. Daylight's wasting. 3. They rode out to the dig on the Tomcat. It did not fly the way the little boy's bike had flown in E.T. Bobby's tractor would never soar cinematically in front of the moon, hundreds of feet above the rooftops. But it did cruise silently and handily 18 inches above the ground, large wheels spinning slowly like dying propellers. It smoothed the ride out a whole hell of a lot. Guard was driving, Bobby standing behind him on the yoke. Your sister left? Guard said. There was no need to yell. The Tomcat's engine was a faint, distant purr. That's right, Bobby said. She left. You still can't lie worth shit, Bobby. And I think, I really do, that I heard her scream just before I hit the patch going into the woods. I think I heard her scream. How much would it take to make a high-stepping, pure-D, bald-cutting bitch like Sissy let out a howl? How bad would it have to be? The answer to that one was easy. Very bad. She was never the type to exit gracefully, Bobby said, or to let anyone be graceful if she could help it. She came to bring me home, you know. Watch that stump, guard. It's a high one. Gardner shoved the gear lever all the way up. The Tomcat rose another 3 inches, skimming over the top of the high stump. Once past, he relaxed his hand and the Tomcat sank back to its previous altitude, 18 inches above the ground. Yes, she just came up here with her bit and her hackamore, Bobby said, sounding faintly amazed. There was a time when she might have taken me, too. As things are now, she never had a chance. Gardner felt cold. There were a lot of ways a person could interpret a remark like that, weren't there? I'm still surprised it took you only one evening to convince her, Gardner said. I thought Patricia McCardle was bad, but your sister made old Patty look like Annette Funicello. I just wiped off some of this makeup. When she saw what was underneath, she screamed. And left so fast you would have thought there were rockets in her heels. It was actually pretty funny. It was plausible. It was so plausible that the temptation to believe it was almost insuperable. Unless you ignored the simple fact that the lady under discussion couldn't have gone anywhere in a hurry without help. The lady could barely walk without help. No, Gardner thought, she never left. The only question is whether you killed her, or if she's out in the goddamn shed with Peter. How long do the physical changes go on, Bobby? Gardner asked.
Not much longer, Bobby said.
And Gardner thought again that Bobby had never been able to lie worth shit.
Here we are. Park it over by the lean-to.
4. The following evening they knocked off early. The heat was still holding, and neither of them felt capable of going on until the last light died. They returned to the house, pushed food around on their plates, even ate some of it. With the dishes washed, Gardner said he thought he would go for a walk.
Oh?
Bobby was looking at him with that wary expression which had become one of her main stocks in trade. I would have thought you'd gotten enough exercise today for anyone. Sun's down now, Gard said easily. It's cooler. No bugs, and... He looked clear-eyed at Bobby. If I go out on the porch, I'm going to take a bottle. If I take a bottle, I'm going to get drunk. If I go for a long walk and come back tired, maybe I can fall into bed sober for one night. All of this was true enough. But there was another truth nested inside it, like one Chinese box inside another. Gardner looked at Bobby and waited to see if she would go hunting for that inner box. She didn't.
All right, she said. But you know I don't care how much you drink, Gard. I'm your friend, not your wife.
No, you don't care how much I drink. You've made it very easy for me to drink all I want, because it neutralizes me. He walked along Route 9 past Justin Hurd's place, and when he struck the Nista Road, he turned left and moved along at a good pace, his arms swinging easily. The last month's labor had toughened him more than he would have believed. Not so long ago, even a 2-mile walk such as this would have left him rubber-legged and winded. Still, it was eerie. No whippoorwills greeted the encroaching twilight. No dog barked at him. Most of the houses were dark. No TVs flickered inside the few lighted windows he passed. Who needs Barney Miller reruns when you can become instead, Gardner thought. By the time he reached the sign reading Road Ends 200 Yards, it was almost full dark, but the moon was rising and the night was very bright. At the end of the road, he reached a heavy chain strung between two posts. A rusty, bullet-holed, no trespassing sign hung from it. Gard stepped over the chain, kept walking, and was soon standing in an abandoned gravel pit. The moonlight on its weedy sides was white as bone. The silence made Gardner's scalp prickle. What had brought him here? His own becoming, he supposed. Something he had picked out of Bobby's mind without even knowing he'd done it. It must have been that, because whatever had brought him out here had been a lot stronger than just a hunch. To the left was a thick triangular scar against the whiteness of the undisturbed gravel. This stuff had been moved around. Gardner walked over, shoes crunching. He dug into the fresher gravel, found nothing, moved, dug another hole, found nothing, moved, dug a third, found nothing. Oh, hey. Wait a minute. His fingers skimmed across something much too smooth to be a stone. He leaned over, heart thudding, but could see nothing. He wished he had brought a flashlight, but that probably would have made Bobby even more suspicious. He dug wider, letting the dirt run and rattle down the inclined slope. He saw he had uncovered a car headlight. Gardner looked at it, filled with an eerie, skeletal amusement. This is what it's like to find something in the earth, he thought. To find some strange artifact. Only, I didn't have to stumble over it, did I? I knew where to look. He dug faster, climbing the slope and throwing dirt back between his legs like a mutt digging for a bone, ignoring his pounding head, ignoring his hands, which first scraped, then chafed, then began to bleed. He was able to clear a level place on the Cutlass's hood, just above the right side headlights, where he could stand, and then the work went faster. Bobby and her buddies had done a casual burial job at best. Gardner pulled loose gravel down by the armload, then kicked it off the car. Pebbles shrieked and squealed on the metalwork. His mouth was dry. He was working his way up to the windshield, and he honestly didn't know which would be better, to see something or nothing. His fingers brushed slick smoothness again. Without allowing himself to stop and think, the silent creepiness of the place might have gotten to him then. He might have just turned and run. He dug a clear place on the windshield and peered in, cupping his hands to the glass to cut the glare from the moon. Nothing. Ann Anderson's rented cutlass was empty. I could have put her in the trunk. The fact is, you still don't know anything for sure. He thought he did, however. Logic told him that Ann's body wasn't in the trunk. Why would they bother? Anyone who found a brand new car buried out here in a deserted gravel pit was going to find it suspicious enough to investigate the trunk, or to call the police, who would do it. No one in Haven would give a rip one way or another. They have concerns more pressing than cars buried in gravel pits right now, and if someone from town did happen to find it, calling the police is the last thing they'd do. That would mean outsiders. And we don't want any outsiders in Haven this summer, do we? Perish the thought. So she wasn't in the trunk. Simple logic, QED. Maybe the people who did this didn't have your sterling powers of logic, Guard. That was a crock of shit, too. If he could see a thing from three angles, the Haven quiz kids could see it from 23. They didn't miss a trick. Gardner backed to the edge of the hood on his knees and jumped down. Now he was aware of his scraped, burning hands. He would have to take a couple of aspirin when he got back and try to conceal the damage from Bobby in the morning. Work gloves were going to be the order of the day. All day. Anne wasn't in the car. Where was Anne? In the shed, of course. In the shed. Gardner suddenly understood why he had come out here. Not just to confirm a thought he had plucked from Bobby's head, if that was what he had done, his subconscious mind might simply have fixed on this as the handiest place to get rid of a big car quick, but because he had needed to make sure it was the shed. Needed to. Because he had a decision to make, and he knew now that not even seeing Bobby change into something which was not human was enough to force him into that decision. So much of him still wanted to dig the ship out, dig it out, and put it to use. So much, so very much. Before he could make the decision, he had to see what was in Bobby's shed. 5. Halfway back, he stopped in the cold, slippery moonlight, struck by a question. Why had they bothered to hide the car? Because the rental people would report it missing and more police would turn up in Haven? No. The Hertz or Avis people might not even know it was missing for days, and it would be longer still before the cops traced Anne's family connection here. At least a week, more like two. And Gardner thought by then, Haven would be done worrying about outside interference one way or another for good. So who had the car been hidden from? From you, Guard. They hid it from you. They still don't want you to know what they're capable of when it comes to protecting themselves. They hid it, and Bobby told you Anne went away. He went back with this dangerous secret turning in his mind like a jewel